Good afternoon. The time is 2:04. This is Vox Pop. I'm Ray Graff, and today we talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement with Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He's a Building Performance Institute certified plumbing analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he's a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. If you have a question for Darren today, the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Energy prices are very, very high, and they seem to be staying very, very high. So we'll talk about ways today, as we begin the program, of making your home a little more energy efficient. And we'll also take your calls on any number of things Darren usually talks about on this program. Darren Tracy is now engineering his headphones. Are they working okay for you, sir?
They seem to be working. They're like tangling up my leg and trying to bite me, but I think I've got it under control. Thank you.
Yes, I blame Alan for that. He comes in, he sits down for the panel, and I think he whirls around like a dervish and and tangles the cords up. So by the end of the show, you'll be untangled, and then we'll let you go. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you.
Now, you had emailed me earlier in the week, and you know, your point was a good one. You said, these are times when people really could do their best to make their homes a little more energy efficient, or a lot more in some cases, and you had some ideas for us.
Well, I do have some ideas, and it's going to be tough on a lot of people this year because energy prices are up roughly 40% from last year. Combine that with fuel prices for your automobile.
Yep.
You know, it's tough. It's tough. And there are some relatively simple things that one can do around your home to improve the energy efficiency so that you're spending less money.
Yeah.
And I can briefly discuss some of those things
right now. While we're waiting for the phones to light up here, let's do that.
Okay. One thing that New York State offers is a free energy audit. That's free, where they will come to your home and probably do a blower door test. And what that is, Ray, is they'll insert a fan inside your entry door and blank off the rest of the opening and turn that fan on and draw pressure on that 50 Pascal pressure. And what that does is allow them to determine how much the home is leaking, how leaky it is, because that's really important, the air infiltration, along with how much insulation you have in the home. So this program is offered through NYSERDA, which is a state authority. And if you go on my Facebook page, I'll have the contact information there. My Facebook page is, you search West Branch Engineering and Consulting, or LinkedIn, or I probably won't put it on my website because that becomes more complicated, but maybe I could send it to you. Do you have a link on your website?
Yeah.
Is that too much work?
No, you could have told me before the show. I would have put it gladly on there, but we'll do it after the show when I put the audio on.
Okay,
that'll
I
be
can
great.
Do that.
Sure.
I do have the phone number memorized from years of calling them. It's 862-1090. That's 518-862-1090.
And who is that for?
That's NYSERDA.
Okay.
That's the general phone number for a NYSERDA.
And you get a detailed report. We've had this done, and you get a very detailed report from NYSERDA on this.
And let me say again, it's free. There are not that many free things. And you do not have to act on what they suggest you do.
Now, those are for our listeners in New York State, mind you.
That's correct. And I think, I don't know for sure, but I would expect that other states have similar type programs. I don't know if there's a fee or not. I know that the state of Maine has some really good energy information. In fact, I copied some of that off, and I put that on my Facebook page, too.
Cool.
The price comparison, how much it's going to cost your home, cost to heat your home this year with different types of fuels. So it's an interesting analysis. And I plugged in NYSERDA's current prices. One thing that NYSERDA has is called a dashboard, where they keep a record of all the prices in different parts of the state for different fuel oils or fuel sources, like fuel oil, kerosene, natural gas, propane, even wood pellets by the ton. And they post that comparison compared to last month, the month before, and years before.
Yeah.
So that's really good information, too. So that's where I would start. And there are also grants available for improving the energy of your efficiency of your home. I mean, this is free money.
For instance, if you have an old boiler and it's 80-something percent efficiency, they will sometimes, I believe, pay portion of a new one if you were to get a new, very efficient boiler.
Right. I'm not sure if this current grant applies specifically to boiler, but I took a quick look at it, and there was a $1,000 grant, a $2,000 grant, and a $3,000 grant. And those are a function of how much work you do. Like the $1,000 grant, I think, is strictly for adding attic insulation, which is low-hanging fruit. It's really a good first move. $2,000 might be air sealing, and then $3,000 might be replacing some windows, something like that.
Interesting. Darren Tracy joins us today. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement. The number is 800-348-2551. And we begin our program today talking a little bit about ways you can make energy-efficient improvements in your home. I know you have more to do here. I got an email much earlier today from someone on this topic. This one's from Mitchell, who writes, I live in an older brick home built in the 40s with all plaster interior walls. It's impossible to keep comfortably warm or cool without high energy bills. There's no insulation, and for heat, I have old steam radiators with a gas-powered furnace. On the bright side, I do have very good new windows. What can I do to improve my heating costs? I see a lot of advertising about geothermal. Are they a smart, eco-friendly, and efficient way to upgrade? And that's from Mitchell.
Okay, geothermal systems are very efficient systems. They're a heavy upfront cost to install,
yeah,
but they're like 300% efficient.
How can that be?
Because they're borrowing energy from the earth. It's free energy. So electric resistance heater, a baseboard heater, for instance, is 100% efficient because all of the heat that goes through that baseboard element comes into the room. You mentioned before the show that you had a new boiler or heating system.
Yeah, last year, okay. On demand.
And that improved the energy efficiency from your old unit. But still, it's not 100%. It might be
in the
90s. Yeah, 90s. But the geothermal really improves upon that by taking advantage of energy of the earth. It's a refrigeration cycle. But as I mentioned, it's heavy up front. So that's one thing he could look into. But Mitchell, the first thing I would look at is attic insulation because it's relatively easy to add blown-in cellulose insulation to your attic. Even if you have 8 inches or 10 inches, if you add another foot, the current building code is R49.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to meet that, but that's the current code, and you get more bang for your buck with attic insulation versus wall insulation. It might be 3 or 4 times more important to have attic insulation versus wall insulation. And wall insulation improvements are difficult to undertake because you've got to insulate from the outside, take your siding off, add insulation, or take the old plaster off from the inside and add some sort of a bat insulation or blown in. You know, that's a lot of expense and a lot of work, but the attic insulation is easy pickings. So that's where I would start. Also start with simple things like putting on sweeps on the bottom of your door. If you look at the bottom of your door, there's air blowing in. You lose a lot of energy that way. So for a few bucks at the hardware store, you can buy a door sweep.
Yep.
Also, the sides of the perimeter of your door, weather stripping, you can strip those. You can focus on staying in one part of your house. Try to heat one part of your house more than other parts. As long as you have a warm spot, that makes your living arrangement more comfortable. You might have a bedroom that you don't use. Close that door. If you can shut that zone off, you can save money that way. You can close your drapes at night. There are all sorts of little ways to make your home more comfortable and spend less dollars on fuel.
This email from Matt, and the subject heading insulated sheathing and vapor barrier. Matt writes, wondering what your opinion is on the inclusion of a vapor barrier when an insulated sheathing, such as the Zip-R by Huber, is used on the exterior of a structure. I have heard differing opinions on this. So that's from Matt.
Okay, that's great. That's going into building science. And really, energy efficiency and building science and air quality, they're really all tied together, because what you do not want to do is make your home so tight and so energy efficient that you don't have fresh air to breathe. So you have to take fresh air into consideration. You have to take vapor barriers into consideration, because you don't want to create any mold problems. So regarding the vapor barrier, in a warm climate, it's different in a southern climate. In a cold climate, I should say, in the winter time, you want the vapor barrier on the inside of your inner wall. You would not want to, say, be behind the sheetrock, or actually the paint on the surface of your sheetrock or plaster can act as a vapor barrier. You would not want to install a vapor barrier on the outside of the wall underneath the sheathing. Like the caller referenced, it's okay to have an air barrier out there. There's a difference between an air barrier and a vapor barrier. An air barrier stops the wind coming in to your home. A vapor barrier stops the moisture from going out through the inside of your home. And when that happens, if you don't have a vapor barrier, that moisture cools and condenses at a certain dew point temperature in your wall cavity, and forms water and rots your framing or your sheathing. So that's an issue.
Darren Tracy joins us today, and the topic is home maintenance, repair, and improvement. We're talking about some energy-saving things you can do for your home today, but any question is on the table. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's grab a call or two before we take our first break. Jonathan in Montgomery. Jonathan, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello, you're on.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I don't get a good afternoon back.
Good afternoon. Now, okay, it's official.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Now, I have. I was doing what your pro was saying to do, which is I cordoned off my living room, which is a large section of my house, and I'm heating the other section with electric heaters, three small electric space heaters.
Yeah.
And it's doing a good job of that. My question is, I have oil heat throughout the house, but I was just wondering if those pipes ever freeze. Do the oil pipes, the heat pipes, ever freeze?
Darren Tracy.
The oil pipes feeding your burner will not freeze. They may gel up with really sub-zero temperatures. That's for the fuel oil. But if you're talking about a hydronic heating system where there are pipes circulating around your house to baseboards or to radiators, yes, they can freeze. So you do not want to close those off, not operate those systems.
That would be a more modern system. I have a Heil-McLean.
No, hydronic systems are old systems, and they're also modern systems. When you say Weil-McLean, that tells me that's a boiler, and that heats up hot water and circulates hot water around the building in pipes to either a radiator, an old cast iron radiator, or baseboard unit heaters that are installed longitudinally along the length of a wall down low. So you probably have those, and again, it's not so much the rooms you have to worry about, because I don't expect your room temperatures that you isolate are going to be below freezing. But
down in the basement, probably.
Right, some of that piping will go down through the floor and around the perimeter of the band joist. That's where it gets really cold. Actually, since I mentioned that, I'd like to suggest that's another really good place to seal around the perimeter of your foundation. Where your wood framing meets either your stone foundation or your concrete foundation. That's called the band joist, and that's a very leaky area. And if you can seal that up, that will help improve your energy savings.
So. All right. Well, Jonathan, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest, and we'll be back with more of your calls in a moment. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Darren Tracy joins us for home maintenance, repair, and improvement. And, you know, Darren Tracy, back in the day, hundreds of years ago, Jim Lavoulis was the producer of this program. And he stepped in. You mentioned the NYSERDA Energy Audit link, and he came in just now and said, I put it on the Vox Pop page.
That dude is on it.
He's a good guy. So thank you for that, Jim. Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Sally in Durham. Sally, you're on.
Hi. I have a if I'm doing, can you hear me?
Yeah, we just lost you for a minute, but just start again.
Okay, so I have a question. I want to just tell you what I'm doing in my house and advice as to whether I'm doing the correct thing. I live in an old house, 1798. The basement, I discovered the beams in the ceiling have powder beetles. So I can take like fistful of powder out of those beams, and it comes out like flour. And so I've removed as much of that as I can, and I sprayed insecticide on it. I see no evidence of it other than the powder. I see no larva. I see no little holes or anything. And then I was going to varnish those beams to maybe prevent this from happening in the future. And also, I should tell you that the basement has home insulation, so a lot of the beams are covered with insulation. Do I need to remove that insulation, or is it okay that I'm just playing around with the exposed ones?
Okay, Sally, I do not think you need to remove that insulation. Regarding the powder post beetles, that's a function of total building science. I talked about moisture earlier. If the moisture content is high, that will attract powder post beetles. If you can keep the moisture down in your home, and that includes the basement, then that would reduce the likelihood of powder post beetles. But it sounds like the damage is already done. It's hard to say if those particular beams have been structurally compromised. You'd have to have someone take a look at it. They may be oversized so that they're okay just the way they are. If they are compromised, you could add additional supports, sometimes called sistering on, that would take care of that. In the basement, you'd want to install a vapor barrier on the floor. We were talking about vapor barriers. It's important to have a vapor barrier on the floor if it's a dirt concrete floor. Get a vapor barrier there and pour concrete over top of it. If you're not in a position to do that for whatever reason, you could just leave the plastic there and be careful walking down there. But keeping that vapor barrier on the floor is really important. You could install brick pavers. That's a more inexpensive, easier weekend warrior type project.
Okay.
That's one method, but it's important to minimize the humidity in the basement.
Sally.
All right, thank you. And you just answered what part of the problem is that basement's been dry forever, and just this year, I've had issues with water, so that explains it. So I'm going to get that issue taken care of. I didn't realize that there was a relationship between these insects and moisture.
Definitely is.
All right, Sally, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy joins us, and Kathy in Seward. Kathy, you're on. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a question about electric-powered boilers.
Okay.
I have an oil burner. It's hot water, baseboard, and my domestic water. And I recently found out that they have them where they run on electricity. And I was wondering if you knew anything about them, like whether they're any good, if they're, you know, how much energy they use, if there's any kind of comparison between using oil to as compared to the electric for the same purpose.
All right, okay. Darren.
I don't have a lot of information about that. I am familiar with electric boilers. I've actually worked on an older electric boiler. They're quite uncommon for new applications.
Why is that?
I'm not sure. Probably efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, electricity, part of that question was the cost of electricity versus fuel oil. I just happened to have a nice graph brought with me. And it tells me that the price of electricity is more expensive than the price of fuel oil in terms of total BTUs in operation. In fact, I've got a whole list here. If you run out of calls, Ray, people could call in and guess what the least expensive fuel is.
Oh, like a game show.
A game show.
Oh, like
I've got
dialing
I've got
for
everything
savings.
From, well, I don't want to give away the...
Yeah, don't. But no spoiler alerts.
But it goes from fuel oil to propane to natural gas to wood pellets to
okay.
wood to propane. So what's if you run out of calls, what's the most cost-effective heating fuel and what's the most expensive
yeah,
heating
well,
fuel?
Yeah, well, I got to assume nuclear is. But, Kathy, do you want to follow up?
The electric boilers that he's seen, are they all older models?
I've only seen one electric boiler in my life, and it was older, and it was more a commercial boiler.
Okay.
You know, there are types of electric heating units, heat pumps, but
yeah, I know, but okay. I just don't want to have to hang things on the walls of my old house.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
And, then what do I do with the baseboard that's already in it, you know? So
right.
I'm looking for a change, and part of it is because I signed up for a community solar electricity supply.
Ah.
And it's doing very well for me as compared to the basic national grid supply. And I am very interested in my carbon footprint.
Yeah, you know,
and I was wondering what kind of a...
We had Alan Ayers on a couple of weeks ago or whenever, a few weeks ago, and he's a plumbing and heating guy, and he talked about these systems that you don't want to do, where you're hanging the—I forget what they call them. They're not splits. Well, they're like split systems.
Mini splits?
But they're— New York State is promoting them, and I think NYSERDA is doing some grants. I don't know if they're going to do them in 2022, but there are some grants of—there were some grants available, according to Alan Ayers, for these things. And, yeah, you might find them unsightly in your old house, but I think those are pretty efficient ways to go.
Might be talking about mini splits. One thing— Kathy, before we let you go, you might want to check into geothermal heating because you can utilize your current baseboard hydronic systems with a geothermal system.
All right, Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy joins us today. Jack in Olive Bridge. Jack, you're up.
Hello. Hey, I wasn't thinking about this when I called, but Darryl, aren't there heat pump units that you can swap right in and replace of an old fuel oil boiler? I think there are. And then use the baseboards that way. I think they're available. I've heard they are anyway. Anyway, my point, first of all, I agree with Darryl's point that the energy efficiency is the way to go. But if you are locked into a fuel oil or propane boiler, I suggest people look into fuel buyers co-ops because right now we're paying approximately one-third on our propane from what the spot price is because we're involved in the Hudson Valley Fuel Oil Buyers Co-op. So look around. Even if you're not in the Hudson Valley, I think there are other ones around the area, too.
That's a great idea. I've heard of co-ops. It's just another way to buy fuel instead of an independent fuel supply company.
And,
it's a cooperative pool resources.
Yeah, and they buy fuel in the spring for the fall, for the next fall, and they get really good prices. Okay.
Okay.
So, and then you're locked in for the whole year. So right now, as I say, we're paying approximately a third of what the spot price is.
Well, that's pretty
Alrighty.
Good. Well, thanks, Jack.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call. Darren Tracy joins us today. You want to follow up on that, Darren?
No, I just think that's a very cool idea, having a cooperative, people pool their resources and get a product for less than what they could on the open market.
Let's go back to the phones. Troy is in Pittsfield, or is Pittsfield in Troy? Let's find out. Hello.
Hi. No, Troy is in Pittsfield.
Okie doke, you're on.
So I have a question about windows. I have two questions. So one is, just recently when it started to get cold at night, we had a lot of condensation forming on the windows, and so the house is 20 years old, and it's kind of builder grade windows. But we also have the the honeycomb type blinds. So when you pull those down at night, it really traps a lot of cold air in there. And we have not turned on the humidifier yet. We had the heat on, but I didn't turn on the humidifier. So there's not too much humidity coming out. So I'm just wondering if it's just having to do with the dew point, because it's still, when it was still relatively warm outside, but getting cold at night, would that be the reason for the condensation forming?
Hi, Troy. Yes, it's a function of where the dew point temperature occurs, and that's good that you're using those honeycomb insulated blinds. That helps, but that, like lots of other scenarios in the world, there are unintended consequences of doing something, and that additional amount of condensation on your windows is one of those unintended consequences. Now, I'll make a suggestion of what you can do is pull that window shade up about an inch off your sill, experiment, half inch, 2 inches, and that gives you just enough air movement down by the bottom, because that's typically where the condensation occurs too, down at the bottom of the window sash.
Huh.
So, and see if there's enough air movement there to evaporate that water and not create a problem. And to your introduction of more moisture in the house by humidification, that's just going to make that problem worse. I'm a proponent of not adding humidification to the house. It does make it a bit more easier to breathe, but it can create problems with your building by introducing too much moisture into your home.
Troy.
We had a big problem, and so we had it turned up too high, and then over the years we kind of found the sweet spot where it's comfortable, but we didn't get the condensation once the humidity level went down. My other question is, my wife hates the windows. She thinks they're horrible, and with replacement windows. Replacement windows, do they, I'm suspecting that they keep the frames, because and so I'm hesitant to do that, because I suspect if there's any leakage, it has to do with the way the window is attached to the framing and how well that's insulated.
When windows are replaced, typically they'll remove the window sashes. The sash is the moving, if it's a two-part window, a double-hung window, it's the frame of the bottom half and the bottom and the top half. Those are called sashes. Typically those are removed and a new complete, say, vinyl replacement window is inserted into that opening and then trimmed out. You can improve the efficiency of your older windows by adding weather stripping. And I would encourage, especially in an old home, I would encourage that, because old windows can be an architectural feature of a home. And if you put some work into an older window and then add a storm window on the outside, it can become close to as energy efficient as a new window. And one other thing about windows, they're great not to have a drafty, you don't have a drafty window, it's nice. But the payback period is typically many, many, many years. Earlier in the program, I mentioned attic insulation. The payback period of attic insulation might be as few as 1 to 2 to 3 years. Payback period on window replacement could be in the high double digits, 10, 15, yeah. 20 years.
So. All right, Troy, well, thank you very much for the call. We are joined today by Darren Tracy, and let's go to Richard in Bethel. Richard, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
great. I love your show. Darren, I have a house. It's about 1,200 square feet. I'm heating it basically with a wood stove. And maybe to answer your question in terms of the BTUs, I'm wondering if the answer is wood pellets.
Oh, the least expensive heating material?
Correct.
No, but it's what you have. It's what you have, the wood stove.
Correct. I want to move away from that, and this goes back to the NYSERDA stuff that you were talking about earlier.
Okay.
I'm thinking about putting in heat pumps into the house, and I was wondering if you can explain, I know there's like heat pumps that work off of coolant, but then there's also heat pumps that are geothermic. And in this area, like, can you explain which is better? Is it even possible to do geothermic heat pumps in this area? And how deep do they have to drill? Like, I was wondering if you could just explain that to me.
Not very easily. The refrigeration cycle is complicated to explain, but I'll do the short explanation on that is that you just borrow energy from a warmer area. For instance, you mentioned a well. You might have to have two or three or four, several wells to utilize geothermal energy. And what it does, the temperature of the earth down below a certain number of feet is like 50 degrees. And
right,
so that's
exactly. It's like 55, 50 degrees. I understand it, but my question is more specific to the area here.
Is it possible in this region? I understand what you're
correct.
Yeah. Definitely possible to use geothermal heating and cooling in this region. Very practical. There's a big upfront cost, but it's efficient to operate. And regarding heat pumps, which operate on the same refrigeration cycle but use air source for the energy exchange, you can use those, and they are good down to a certain temperature, and progress has been made in recent years so that you can utilize those down into, say, the teens, temperatures in the teens. It didn't used to be that way. They weren't efficient or effective at all, but they've improved the efficiency, so they can be. They're not going to help you out on a 15-degree day, but for most of the winter, they can. They're great for supplemental heat.
Okay, so disregarding the upfront cost, from your expertise, do you think like the geothermic, which I'm assuming is more reliable due to the outside temperature as opposed to the coolant? That's a question, not a statement.
Yeah, I'm not understanding that question, the heating cycle versus the cooling cycle, more reliant. But geothermal, I'm looking at my graph that I brought with me. Geothermal heating is the least expensive method of heating other than burning wood. And so...
But when you factor in the upfront cost...
You factor in the upfront cost, I'm not sure when the payback term is. You know,
right.
You'd have to have that for like 10 or 15 years before it became paying yourself back. One thing, Ray, I'd like to just mention in general about burning wood. If anybody burns wood out there, make sure you have your fire alarms, smoke detectors, checked out batteries, and make sure you keep your chimney clean.
Yep.
Once, twice, three times a year. It's all a function of the particular burning unit. But safety is paramount, and you really want to keep your chimney cleaned out.
All right, let's take a quick break. Darren Tracy joins us today. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, and we'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Darren Tracy, let's do a couple of emails here before we go back to the phones. This is from Joel. I just installed a new Pure Pro cast iron boiler. The net AHRI rating for water is 80. For steam, it's apparently unknown. There's no number. I heard Ray say that if you have an old 80-rated boiler, you should get a new one. I didn't actually say that. Just to be clear, I'm not recommending anyone do anything because, frankly, I'm a radio guy and I don't know much about anything. Let's see what
Darren
says.
True. Again, there's a payback time period. With a newer boiler, it may be more efficient than your older boiler, probably is, or furnace, probably is. Might be in the 90 range. Your older unit might be in the 80 range, but it might cost you between $5,000 and $10,000 to replace that boiler. So if you do the math, the payback on that is probably double-digit years. It's out there. So
yeah, but the from my standpoint, we're very happy we made that switch.
Well, and you had help from NYSERDA too, right?
Exactly.
Okay, well, that brings that payback period back down. So that's one reason to get a hold of NYSERDA and take advantage of one of the better government agencies out there that we fund with our tax dollars.
And the on-demand hot water. I don't know how we got by without it. It's just so cool. This is from Sandy in Johnstown. We have a 30-year-old house with Anderson windows, and those windows that roll out have screens on the inside that we take out in the winter. Does Anderson, well, we don't know. Does Anderson have storm windows that could take the place of these screens in the winter? Would it help with losing heat? Just to be fair, Darren doesn't work for Anderson Windows, but maybe you can give us an answer to that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Anderson sells storm windows for their windows. If they're 30 years old, they're probably double pane insulated windows already. There are other manufacturers out there that do make storm windows that could improve the energy efficiency of your home. Another method is to put a storm on the inside. There are inside storm windows that you can have those ordered to fit specifically for the size of your window, and they can Velcro type in place.
Yeah,
that's another method. That's a good way to insulate older windows as well.
This one's from Joe. And Joe writes, regarding the closing off of rooms in conjunction with the thermostat not kicking the boiler in due to heaters or a wood stove, one can freeze the baseboard pipes, as I have a few times. Antifreeze can be added to the system, which will prevent this from happening. And that's from Joe. True or not true, Darren?
That's true. That's true. And antifreeze, actually, I had that initially when I installed our boiler in our home. It can be a bit corrosive on the unit. More so than just water, but that's a good idea. You just have to be careful. I know the guy that installed our boiler was bleeding it, and he drained the antifreeze when he was circulating. He drained it into the sump of our house, and it ended up into our drinking water.
Ouch!
And that wasn't good.
That's
but
not
yeah,
a good
that's
plan.
That's not a bad idea to add antifreeze. It's a clip for the listeners. The circulating fluid for hydronic system is closed loop, so it's in there and it just keeps circulating around and around and around. So you could add some antifreeze to that, and it's probably a good idea. Probably a good idea. I'd be interested in hearing Alan's input on that regarding the corrosivity to the
boilers. Well, that's a good point,
good
too.
Idea. But yes, yeah, just if you are shutting off rooms, shutting off zones in the house, you get on these colder days, you want to make sure that you're circulating that water if you don't have antifreeze in it so your pipes don't break, because that's not good news.
All right, one more email and then back to the phones we go. This one's from Nick. Had the honor of working with a freshly cleaned and state-of-the-art actual fireplace. Slept next to it. Cozy. But a question, how efficient is this in a tall ceiling house with limitless wood? Limitless wood.
That would be the same as unlimited wood?
I like it. Limitless wood is great.
Yeah. I'm not sure the efficiency. They're very inefficient relative to other heating apparatus. It might be in the 30 or 40% range. And the function of that is if you can close the opening off after the fire is out versus you have a fire in the evening and
you have to leave it.
Yeah, you have to let the keep the flue open. So the fire might go out at 9:30 in the evening, and then it's open from 9:30 until whenever you get up in the morning, and then you're losing a lot of energy that way. So there are some variables in that equation. But generally not efficient, but it does provide some heat, and the aesthetics are nice, and also it warms up one space. Getting back to what I said, if you can warm up one area of your home and not the whole portion of your home and make that more comfortable and the place where you can hang out. When you do that, if you are using a space heater, do not use an extension cord to plug that space heater in, because the extension cord may not be a heavy enough gauge and it could be a fire hazard. So any of these space heaters, you want to plug those directly into the wall outlet. I'm glad I got that out.
That's so important. True, and we mention that every year. Darren Tracy is our guest, and let's go to Naomi in Galway. You're on. Hello, Naomi.
Hi. I had a question about insulation. A few years back, I had some salesmen knock on the door, and they sold me on this Space Age insulation. It's very thin. It's got silver on both sides, and I cannot remember the name or the company or anything, but it's super, super thin. And they put it on the roof in my attic, on the inside, of course, you know, in my right. attic. And they said I could take the insulation off of the floor of the attic if I wanted to. And maybe even, it was like 6-7 years ago, maybe even recommended I did that it would actually even work better. That seems counterintuitive to me, but I did have a new roof put on, but there was water damage before I had this insulation and the new roof. And so the old insulation is kind of gnarly. I didn't know if I should take it out. I mean, it's dried. It's not like moldy or anything. It's just had gotten wet and dried. Or if I should leave it in, it is additional protection, or take it out and put more in.
Okay, Naomi, typically attic insulation is on the floor of your attic. Is that where you're...
The original insulation is on the floor of my attic, but what I was sold is the Space Age insulation is actually on the ceiling of the attic.
Okay, then that's not going to help you out too much, because any area above the insulated floor is called unconditioned space, and you don't care if that's warm or not. In fact, you don't want that warm. You want that vented to take away any moisture that might be there. That insulation might help in the summer to reflect some of the heat, but it's not going to help you very much in the winter time. That type of product works really well on the outside of a house. If a house is going to be resided and you have a thin layer of insulation, although the insulation is thin and the R value proportionally is relatively low, it really helps on the outside because it helps seal the house. It's like adding on another coat to your body. You can add a coat. It may not be a real thick down coat, but just that additional layer.
The layer.
Yeah, and it creates a micro-size air layer between the insulation and the existing siding. It's helpful on the exterior.
So I pretty much got sold.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that's going to help you out much.
Yeah. I kind of had the gut feeling when I did. I was like, that was kind of stupid. It was kind of expensive. I should leave it anyway, though, correct? Or
Well, I wouldn't.
I mean, I don't want to take down the
I wouldn't go to the effort of removing it. As I said, it might help some in the summer to reflect some heat back out and keep the attic.
I think I did notice the summer being better and staying cooler. I don't have central air, and I just use one room. I have a small ranch, and it did seem with the cooling it helped. I didn't really notice either way with the heating.
One thing I would note, Naomi, is to make sure that that's not interfering with your attic ventilation, because you want to ventilate that space above your insulation so that no condensation forms. So that doesn't want to be in the way of your ridge vent or your soffit vent.
Okay. It is not covering the vents. It's just on the peak part. I appreciate that. And I did come up with, and I apologize, another question while I was listening.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Impatiently waiting. So my basement at my house has a French drain. It had it when I bought the house. It was in foreclosure. Somebody had come in and stole all of the pipes. And so Nothing was running, and it flooded because the front drain and the sump pump weren't working, and it got some serious mold. I've gotten rid of the mold. The front drain works very well. My floor is wet at times, but there's no flooding. But I was listening, and you're talking about putting water barriers and such down. That's obviously a big. I don't have the money to put a big project into the basement right now. Is there something you would recommend sealing the walls with, or anything like that that I could do that's not crazy expensive and do it yourself?
There is no good product that I'm aware of, and I've checked, that can be applied to the what's called the negative side or the inside of basement walls to keep water from coming in. What you can do is put a thermostat or a humidistat there, and in humid parts of the summer, install a dehumidifier.
Okay.
Enjoy.
Hey, Naomi, we really got to move it along here, but thank you very much for the call. We'll go over to Troy and Amanda. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a small room in the back of my house. It's about 14 by 9. It has three exterior walls, and it was cold, so we had it insulated underneath in the basement crawl space with 3 inches of foam on the walls and on the rim joists, and also a thick vapor barrier on the floor. But the room is still very cold. So is there anything else I can do?
You could insulate the attic space above that, or the area above the ceiling of that room.
So we had, I think it's through NYSERDA, where you can have a free energy evaluation of your home. And that space was fine. They did the infrared.
Okay.
And the attic was good. So I think it's the exterior walls are really thin.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering, could just like air just kind of be coming somehow like through the wall or not air, but like cold?
Both. Air can come through the wall, and also you can lose radiant heat through the wall. Not easily. You'd have to insulate more from the inside or the outside. It becomes expensive to do that. You can do that. It's going to be a tough room to keep really warm because you have three sides exposed to the elements.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Well, Amanda, thank you very much for the call. Molly in Rosendale. Molly, you're on.
Hi. I'm planning to go to Florida for like 2.5 months this winter.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if it's better to turn the heat down low and either drain the pipes or not,
okay,
or turn the heat off and drain the pipes.
We've definitely had that question around this time of year every year. So what do you think, Darren?
Well, first of all, lucky you, Molly. second of all, I would not turn the heat off. You can have paint peeling and get into all sorts of problems. You could turn it down low. You know, maybe 50 would be a good temperature. Regarding draining the pipes, it's not a bad idea to do that. Alternatively, you could have a temperature alarm in your house if you're technologically skilled or into that. And if you have a low temperature alarm sent to you, you'd know you need somebody to go over there and attend to the heating system that's failed or something like that. Not a bad idea. It's an insurance policy to drain the pipes, but not necessarily needed. But turn the heat down to, I'd say, 50. Don't shut the heat off completely.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. Now we see Ariel in Napanock, who's been waiting a long time. Ariel, you're on.
Hi. Yes, thanks. It's a great show. And I wanted to ask Darren about a hot air heating system. I have an old house, but a relatively new oil furnace. But the heat is distributed through hot air ducts. And if I close off a zone of the house, I've been warned by the furnace folks that that's not a good idea with the system. So I wanted to ask for your opinion.
Yeah, there's some merit to that because the system is balanced and there's a return air that's associated with the supply air. So you would have to take that into consideration. But I think you can block that off if you understand that some of the return air needs to be, say, blocked off in that room as well. balance the supply and return on the system, but I think that can be done.
So the return air would be through the same vent or a different vent, or does that depend
on
the
system? No, it's not the same vent. It's a different vent. So you're distributing air throughout your home, and that air needs to get back to the furnace because it recycles. And there's a return duct, and typically it's a larger duct and more centrally located. But if you're supplying one room, if you're shutting air off, I wouldn't shut it off completely. You wouldn't want that room frigid. But if you reduce the flow to that room supply, you'd want to reduce the return and balance the system, and then you could do that.
Gotcha. Great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Now, another person who's been waiting a very long time, and we only have about 2 or 3 minutes left here with Darren Tracy, Ralph in North Chatham. Ralph, you're on.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hello?
Hello. You're on.
Hi. So my question is, we bought a house about a year and a half ago. It's a two-story house with an attic. We're fortunate enough, the owner's previous.
Hey, Ralph. Hey, Ralph. Ralph, are you on a speakerphone, yeah, buddy?
No.
Okay, it's very muffled. We're having a tough time understanding.
I'm squinting, oh, trying to hear.
We lost him. All right. Well, I'm sorry, Ralph. I apologize. You're squinting, trying to hear.
Yeah.
Now, that's funny. All right. 1 minute left. Suzanne in Gloversville. Suzanne, go ahead.
You've answered a lot of my questions.
Oh.
We're ready to put in heat pumps. My big question is, how do we find somebody that is an expert at this? Is there some type of website we can go to where people are listed? We don't want to just call anybody and say, okay, this is what we want.
Great question. And Darren, we've often talked about this. Word of mouth and talking to your neighbors is a good way to start.
Word of mouth, that's good. You can also go to your local heating supply houses. They really have a good list of contractors. You can't buy those types of units at big box stores anyways, but every community has a plumbing and heating supply store where that's their specialty. Go in there, and you can get some advice from them.
Okay, and we are willing to purchase parts now to install later. Would that be a good thing to do?
Not necessarily. I mean,
with the supply chain issues, maybe you're playing past it.
Maybe, but not necessarily. First thing I would do is get a hold of a contractor. That would be the first step, and they can advise you to that.
We're almost out of time,
Susan.
Go ahead.
Do we need an environmental engineer to look at our home and see what types of ways these things need to be put on?
Probably not. You needed an experienced heating contractor.
All right, Suzanne, we'll leave it there. And Darren Tracy, once again, how do people find you online?
West Branch Engineering. You can search that. I've got a website. And West Branch Inc., that's our construction company. We've got a website there. Then my email, darren@westbranchinc.com, for individual calls that I try to do as much as I can.
You're very helpful with people. And I got to tell you, this was your idea. I mean, you're on almost every month, and you said, let's do energy efficiency today. Good call, brother.
Yeah,
good
yeah.
job. Thanks for being here. Happy holidays.
You're welcome.
Support comes from Dancing Deer Baking Company, artisan cookies and fudge brownies, delivering handcrafted holiday gifts for over 27 years. No matter the distance, we got you covered. DancingDeer.com. At ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York, consulting, marketing, and resources for artists and the arts, ArtSpark.com. Once again, thanks to Darren Tracy for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging on the line. Some people were on well over 30 minutes on hold, and then the guy had a bad connection and hung up on himself. Oh, that's a terrible day. I apologize. Thanks to Susie Checkeye for screening the calls, our engineer, Zach Malloy. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. We welcome Deanna Fox back, and she can talk about whatever she wants to. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.